This is Outside the Round with Matt Barile, a Rage Rowdy podcast.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Outside the Round with me, Matt Barile. Today, a very special guest. She comes from the great state of Texas. She's been doing this thing a long time. She's got some new music dropping, brand new record. We got our girl, Sunny Sweeney. Sunny, it's great to meet you. Thank you for coming out here and hanging out with us.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.
In Old Hickory, Tennessee, behind the Tractor Supply.
Which, by the way, is only 1 mile from my house if I could jump the river.
Oh, you're in Hendersonville. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like looked at the map. I was like, oh my God, if I had a canoe.
Yeah, like, why don't they just build a dang bridge
over the lake? I don't know. Because, like, all of my friends live in Mount Juliet, so it would make it so much easier.
Yeah.
Anyway, what else?
Yeah, I feel like, well, how's life? How have things been going?
Good.
Good.
Rolling. You know, we've had a couple of incidents in the last couple of months dealing with, like, travel situations. A drunk driver totaled our van and trailer.
Oh, no. Jeez.
While we were on stage. So that was fun.
Where was that?
In Kentucky.
Classic Kentucky. Classic. Love you, Kentucky, but classic.
So, yeah, that was fun. And then we got a new van and trailer. And then I've been out on tour with Casey Chambers and also did a run with Trisha Yearwood.
Oh, nice.
And then now we're about to go out with my band for our record release.
Sweet. That's awesome. Yeah, I see you got a bunch of tour dates coming up. And you've been doing this thing for a while. Talk about growing up, like being part of that wave coming out of Texas before there was the bridge of Texas to Nashville. Like, you were around before it was like where were two separate things, when like Ragweed and Casey Donahue and Wade Bowen and those guys, it was a different time, you know?
It was. Those guys, all that you mentioned, plus Randy Rogers and Kevin Fowler and Jason Boland, all those guys, they were all very instrumental in my beginning because they all were very cool to me. Randy was one of my first friends in this business. We went to college together.
Oh, no way.
Mm-hmm. And so when I started, they were always like, hey, come open for us. You know, it'll be fun and whatever. And I didn't know my ass from a hole in the ground. And I still really don't, but I really didn't then. And so I just kind of was like following, you know, I knew they were all successful and they were doing their thing and all that. So I was like, okay, this will be fun. So I went and played with them a bunch. Randy, Boland, Fowler, Jack Ingram, all those guys. And then I just had this epiphany that I wanted to get out of Texas. Like, I love Texas. I've got a Texas tattoo on me. Like, I love Texas.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get out of Texas more, and I wanted to see what was out there, you know? And I was just kind of, like, playing. People always ask, like, how did you start? And I was like, I don't really know. I played shows. Like, I booked every show that I could book. And anywhere in Austin is where I lived. Anywhere that would let me set up a PA, I would play. Like, I played at a grocery store.
Wow.
Like, I played in a Walmart. Like, I'm not kidding. I played in the bra section at a Walmart. Like, I'm not even joking you. So anyway, I guess then I started playing more and more and more. And then I get this random email from this guy that says he owns a record label and he wanted to give me a record deal. So I was like, okay. Which ended up being Big Machine Records. They sent me a message on MySpace. It sounds ridiculous, but it's true.
Yeah.
And so then I did start touring more, and I got on some bigger tours, you know, like Nashville tours or whatever, and started coming to Nashville. And I was broke. And I mean, like, broke. But I took out a loan so that I could come here once a month for a week and stay in the Best Western on Demumbrian. And I had enough money. I got a loan for enough to do this for a year. I did it 12 months in a row. Came up here for a week, went out to every writing night that I could find, met a bunch of people, like mingled my complete ass off, and met some really good friends, most of which I'm still friends with and still write with. But I stayed at the Demumbrian and had enough money to rent a hotel and fly up here and rent a car for a week. I did that for 12 months. And then I feel like that really helped me, you know, meet people. I came by myself. I had never even really been to Nashville, but I thought, like, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go, like, figure it out, you know, and I don't know if I figured it out, but I certainly have tried to figure it out. And yeah. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah. OG DeMumbrian, like back in the day when the Shoney's was there.
It was after, I think Shoney's may have been on the tail end, but like Dan McGinnis was there and I spent a lot of nights in Dan McGinnis.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, it was just such a different time then. And it's still great, you know, but man, it was really great then. And you could just go out. There was writer's nights every night and like everything was so cheap and close and easy to park and, you know, all that.
It was very musician friendly.
Totally.
Very songwriter friendly.
Totally.
Like, it was the community, like Tin Roof, everybody hung out there. Like
yeah.
the OG
yeah.
days. Because I got here 2018, so I was a little bit later
yeah.
than that. But hearing about like that era of when it was really like a musician's town. Now it's grown and it's awesome that it's grown in some aspects.
Right.
But it's a different place.
That's what Austin is too, though. And honestly, like Austin and Nashville always have reminded me of each other. And I lived in Austin. I went to college there. And they've always reminded me of each other, but I feel like the corporate stuff that has come in has run all the musicians out of town.
Yeah, it's very expensive now.
Yeah, like my rent in Austin got so expensive that I literally left.
Wow.
Like I left. That's like crazy. I couldn't do it anymore. I was like, oh my God, y'all, this is what your city is based on and you're running us out of town.
Yeah.
I hardly have any friends that live in Austin anymore.
Yeah, I've heard that there's been like a big exodus and everybody goes back to kind of the little pockets of where they're from in Texas
yeah.
and then goes to Austin as they need to, like people come to Nashville as they need to.
Yeah, and I mean, I've always kind of done both.
Yeah.
And I really do love Nashville. I do. I've always loved it here. I love that there's a winter.
Yeah.
You know? Very rarely did it get cold enough for me in Texas. And I like sweat. I'm a sweater. Like I hate sweating. I just want to be cold. I want to live in Antarctica. Like I want to like not have to do the heat anymore. And I know it's hot as hell right here right now.
Yeah.
But like it's only for like a minute.
Yeah.
Comparatively. Like in Texas, I remember sitting on my porch at 1 a.m. literally with back sweat. I'm like, I cannot do this anymore.
Yeah,
I'm out.
Yeah, you'd get into the hotel, set that thing to 60 if it can go down.
Dude,
there.
If it'll go to 50,
okay.
I like want to sleep in a meat locker.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
Yeah. I want it awesome. Cold.
Yeah, I feel that. I was always the same way when I was out on the road. Like as soon as we got in there, like, just
turn it on.
Put me in a damn freezer.
Hey, we've moved rooms because it's not cold enough.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I found out that my boyfriend and I are actually most compatible is we're thermostatically compatible.
Oh,
that's what we say.
That's a big deal, yeah.
And I'm like, man, if we can share a hotel room and both want it like a freaking meat locker, I'm good.
Yeah.
So.
We're set. So how is it now continuing? You've been doing this for a while. Talk about this new project and what it's like now, fast forward, because you've been doing this. When did you start putting music out?
My first gig was August of 2004.
Yeah, so it's been
21 years.
Yeah, you've been through multiple like evolutions of the genre, of the format. You've seen country turn into a stadium thing. Of course, George and Garth and those guys were doing it back then. And
mm-hmm.
you had the stuff in the 2010s of like the bro country era and all that. But like where things are at now, I feel like your music's evolved with it, like, over time.
I feel like, you know, I was going to say I'm probably not the right person to ask this question because I'm very opinionated about it, but...
That's what we love. We love opinions.
Okay. So, I'm from East Texas, and, like, the way that I talk is the way that I talk. So, naturally, if I sing, that's what it's going to sound like.
Yeah.
So... I didn't know what I sounded like when I could, or even if I could sing. I didn't know. I just thought, like, I'd love to try to do this. You know, I've always done musical theater and, like, you know, sang in the choir and stuff like that. But then, like, actually doing this, I thought, okay, well, I guess I'm a country singer. Like, that's just what happens, like, when I talk or when I sing. So my first record, I never had any intention of making a record. Let me be very clear with you. Like, I wanted to play in Austin. For tips, I was fine. I played 7 nights a week, set up my PA. I was having a ball. I mean, I got free food every night. I was having a ball, okay? And I just enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed it, you know? And I still enjoy it, which is literally half the battle. Because I know so many people. And it's hard, don't get me wrong. Like, it's the hardest business I've ever done.
Yeah.
But it is the most validating and important. It is a very important business. Art is so important. Okay. So anyway, I digress, because then when I made my first record, I was just playing at this place called the Poodle Dog. I had no intentions of doing anything else besides that. And fans that were coming religiously every Sunday would be like, when are you going to make a record? You got to make a record. I was like, I don't know that that's going to happen. Like, I'm not going to make a, what? Why would you want me to make a record? What do you, who would I sell it to? Like, I mean, I had so many questions. So enough people started asking that I started asking around, and got together with a couple of my friends, Tom Lewis and Tommy Dedamore and Chris Wall, may he rest in peace. And I said, you know, these people want me to make a record. I don't know what to do. What is that even? What? So they helped me make this record. I took out a loan. Again, I don't like borrowing money. So like I took out up from people. So I like borrowed this money from this bank to make this record and put this record out. And when I went to press them at the place, they said, how many do you want? And I was like, I don't know, like a couple hundred. And the lady that was pressing them started laughing. She's like, well, I mean, you kind of need more than a couple hundred. Like, you're going to sell those in a, you know, in a week. And I was like, I don't even know a couple hundred people. Like,
yeah.
So she talked me into 1,000 and I about died. I was like, oh my God, that's insane. I'm going to have these forever. And then I sold them. And then I thought, wait, people are buying these. And then it all kind of clicked for me. And then I got a record deal with that record. They licensed that record. And then I had to be on the artist protection program for like 6 years while they held me captive, not doing anything for 6 solid years. And then I put another record out 6 years after, you know, my first record. And then I got dropped consequently a couple years after that because I was too country, I guess. That's what I was told. And which I kind of took as a compliment. and then I just went back full indie and kind of just figured it out. And I'm still figuring it out. And I just, this record, we intentionally went in. I saw this quote the other day that said, country isn't a costume. Like, it's not a costume. It's just not. And just because you have a banjo in your music, that doesn't make it country. Or just because you have a fiddle, that doesn't make it country. Like, country music to me is stories and melodies and a beginning, middle, and an end in a story, and like resolution in the story, and about real life things and things that like Loretta Lynn would have sang about or Waylon Jennings would have sang about, and like hard shit that goes on in your life. And so my guitar player and I were talking about this, and I was about to need to make a new record, and I said, you know, really, why are we going to hire a producer? Like, why don't we just do this by ourselves? Like, why don't we just, me and you try to do it? And he's like, well, I mean, we totally can, because you've never asked me. Like, of course, like, yeah, we can do that. He's so inventive. He's so creative. And I have a lot of really, you know, strong ideas, and he has really strong ideas, and we just decided to go at it ourselves.
Yeah.
Ourselves. And so, we made a record that we would want to listen to if we wanted to hear a country record.
Yeah.
So that's the only way that I can describe it, is that like, it's something that I would, if I wanted to, if you put this record out, I would be like, damn, that's a country record, you know? Like,
yeah. And it's something where you've built such, like, you've built a following where, you know, your fans know you and they relate to you. So it's like, you gotta be authentic to yourself. That to me is one of the best parts about country music, is the fans connect with the art so well, and they're going to sniff if this isn't a Sonny record.
Well, yeah. And like, there's been, you know, I've made more like Americana influence or Americana genre or whatever. I don't even know what's what anymore, but like, I've made records that have, they always have country, because I'm the one singing it. But like, they lean more a certain way, or this one will lean more a certain way, or this one will lean more a certain way. But this one is like intentionally what I think country music should sound like. I guess. I mean, I don't know how else to put that, but like.
Yeah, country is a way of life. And it's funny that like the stuff that's too country gets labeled as Americana. Like, it gets put into its own damn genre.
It's so weird.
But that's more rootsy and more what the guys and girls were doing in the 90s, the 80s, the early 2000s than anything.
Yeah. And I mean, on this record, like when I listen back to records that I love, there's always a Telecaster. I love Waylon Jennings' phaser that he uses on everything, or a lot of things. Merle, Buck Owens, like Don Rich is playing, like, and then I love the storytelling that Loretta had. Loretta Lynn truly is one of the greatest songwriters of all time. And the reason is because, and she even told me this, she said, write what you know. She's like, I'm not pretending to write something I don't know. And I said, okay, well, same. But I mean, it's easier for me to write something I've lived, you know, like I've always had luck with that, like where I know the people that I write well with, and my circle has gotten very small with co-writers and stuff. And I know what I'm going to get at this. You know what I mean? Like, I know at this point, after doing this for this long, I know who my people are as far as like writing. Not saying I won't branch out and write with other people, because I will. Like, and I have, and I do, and I just did last week. But like, for the most part, when I know a specific sound that I want, I know who to call for each part. You know, like,
yeah.
And when it's like something that I know that I want something really country, I know who to call. And like, I don't know, haven't mentioned this really, but like, I got hired to be a musical coordinator for a musical. And
that's cool.
It's really cool. Yeah. I'm very excited about it. And then also write the songs for it. And so it's me and two of my best friends that I've written with forever and ever and ever, Monty Holmes and Buddy Owens. And so it's a country musical about aliens. It sounds wacky,
but sounds so cool.
It is so It is so freaking cool. I'm so excited. So like, but they said, like, we want these songs to be really country. We want them to be authentic. And I picked up the phone. I go, hey, guys. And they're like, yeah, we went in.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Is that back in Texas? Is that here in Nashville? That's here.
It's. I mean, it's kind of
going to be
everywhere.
All over the place. Yeah. That's really cool.
I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, country music and aliens together.
Are you kidding me?
And it's like neo-traditional sounding. Like, they want it to be country. Like, that's sick.
There's one of the songs that we wrote that literally we were like, damn, do we want to turn this in? Because I want to record it so bad. Want to record it so bad. But yeah, I'm really excited about it.
That's awesome. You talk about writing like the real stuff, like the real shit. There's one song on here called Diamonds and Divorce Decrees. And that title to me is just like badass, like Texas. Like, talk about that one, because I got like the track list pulled up here, and it's like you're writing about some real shit.
Well, Diamonds and Divorce Decrees, I mean, I've been divorced twice, and I'm whatever, it's not something I'm proud of, but it is what it is. So so after I got divorced, I realized that I've made this decision. Oh shit, where am I gonna go? So I called my mom. I said, Mom, I have nowhere to go. Can I move back in with y'all? And she's like, oh, we've been dying for our daughter to move back in with us. Yes, please hurry. When can you be here? And I'm like, look outside. I'm in your driveway. So I moved back in with them. It was just supposed to be like a couple weeks, and it ended up being literally 2 years.
Wow.
Thank God they're cool. Anyway, so when I moved out, I took all my stuff. I got a house over in Hendersonville, and I left my safe there, like a little tiny safe. All that's in it is my grandmother's diamonds and my two divorce decrees. And so my mom kept going, like, you need to come get this. It's in my way. I was like, Mom, it's so small. Like, put it under a bed or whatever. She's like, no, it's in my way. Come get it. I said, Mom, all that's in there is my diamonds and my divorce decrees. And then I thought, what? And then I thought, I would be doing myself no justice if I do not go home and write that song right now. So I called my friends, Buddy and Galen. We were about to write that night anyway. I said, I've got it. I've got a title for y'all. So we wrote that. It's just funny. Like, it seems like something old country, you know, like back in the day, that someone that you would have heard from, like, I don't know, Farron Young, or I don't know. Like, it just sounds like a funny, like a cool, like old title, I guess.
Yeah, and it's something that people relate to. Like, there's women and there's guys that relate to your music, and there's someone else that understands where you're coming from, of that moment of getting divorced and having diamonds and divorce decrees, you yeah. know? Like, it's relatable as shit.
There's been a lot of men, actually, that have come up to me and said, when are you making a t-shirt with that on there? I got to get one for my ex-wife.
Like, that's awesome. That's so cool. How has it been, too, like, having your day ones from, like, 20 years ago to now still having those fans? And it's like, they're growing up with you. You know, like, they've been on this journey with you for so long, and they're your ride or dies, whether they're in Texas or they're in Chicago or New York, or like, you have them all over the country at this point.
It's really wild. We were talking about that the other day. One of my favorite things about this business is the fact that anywhere we go in the entire universe, we have friends there. Yeah. Like, meaning, like, I like going. That's half the reason I like my job, is I like going to new places, and I like going to old places, and I like seeing people that I haven't seen in a while. And, like, we played some shows this past weekend up in somewhere, Michigan. And there's these two fans, the Dilks is their last name, and Mr. and Mrs. Dilks. And they used to fly to Austin back in like 2007 to come see me at the Poodle Dog. Wow. This place doesn't even have a credit card machine, okay? Like, I mean, it is a cinder block building, okay? Yeah. And they used to come there like once a year and hang out, and they're still with me. And like, that's the part that I'm always like, I haven't run y'all off yet, like, after all this time. But honestly, like, I love that so much. I love being able to go places and see people over and over. And I love when those people bring new people.
Which they always do.
It's the biggest compliment ever. And even more of a compliment is when the new person ends up in the merch line at the end of the night. I'm like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, and then that new person turns into a friend, and then they yep. bring new people, you know? Yep. That's how you build that cult following. And that's something I think that's powerful with the indie side. And you've been doing an indie for a while. Mm-hmm. I think of like my buddies from Muscadine Bloodline. You know, like mm-hmm. they're indie guys, and they've built like a cult following where they're doing it their way, and their fans like it because they know that it's them, just like right. your fans know that it's you. Like,
that's a really good point.
Like, you're only putting it out if you want to put it out. You're writing it because you want to write it, not because somebody's right. telling you to.
I tried it, you know, for a couple years on a label, and on a, you know, major label, and I'm grateful for that opportunity. Like, yeah. it gave me opportunities I would not have had otherwise. But I think for me, and for my personality and the way that I like doing my business and the way that I am a type A personality and a control freak. but at least I know that. Like, yeah. I like doing it my own way. I like hiring the people that I want to hire. My team is wonderful, and I have put them all in place on purpose. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. like, they're all great at their job. They're all respectful of my ideas. If they don't like my ideas, that's fine, but we can have a normal conversation. It's not like, well, no, you're doing it my way, whether you like it or not. Or the other person going, no, you're doing it my way. Like, it's like, okay, let's talk about this, and then we'll figure it out.
Yeah, you're the CEO of your own business. That's something yeah. that artists, I don't think, realize, is even when you're in a label deal, you're the CEO of whatever, like, your artist LLC is.
And you know something else people don't realize is that in the terms of, like, a regular job, you have a manager that you work for. In this business, the manager works for you.
Yeah.
So that's something that, like, when that got relayed to me and, like, beat into my scalp, I was like, oh my God, it was so eye-opening. I was like, wow, okay, these people work for me. Like, you know, like, you, there's been times in my life, in my career, where I've been made to do things because I just didn't have the mentality to think, I can't tell them no, they're my manager. Yeah, I can.
They're on a percentage of what you are.
Yeah,
not the
and
opposite.
Like, you can't. You that was just so eye opening for me to realize that they work for you.
Yeah.
I don't know why that took me that long to figure that out, but It is facts.
Yeah, there's young artists that don't know that.
Man.
That are winning and don't know that.
It was eye-opening for me. And that being said, I mean, managers are very important. It's the one of the most important, you know, crucial parts of your job. But it's not like a, it's not like a, whatever it's called, they can't just control you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge thing, and they're a part. You agree to have that manager, and you have to have the right guy or the right girl in your corner, and it's so important. You've gotten to be around for a while, so I'm sure you've gotten to like be someone that younger artists, especially females coming out of the Red Dirt scene, like look up to. Like I think about like the Caitlin Butts of the world, like the younger like females that are coming out of that Red Dirt world and stuff. What's it been like to kind of start out as like coming up with like Randy and Jason and all those guys that you mentioned to having folks that look up to you or that you've gotten to watch grow over the years?
I still find it insane because like I really truly feel like I don't know what I'm doing still. I mean, I do, but because that's exactly right. There are quite a few young women who have been like where I just have become friends with them over the years, and like they ask questions, and like I'm very honest. I'm very honest about anything they want to ask me. Yeah. Like, and it may not be the pretty answer that they want, but like there's a handful of girls that I just adore. I mean, Taylor Honeycutt, I'm obsessed with.
Dude, Taylor's the
shit.
I love that woman, dude. Yes. She's awesome, and she's doing it her way. Yes. And she's making fire right now, man.
She's so cool. And she's like, she's really, really cool, and she's really talented. And then like Erin Biancourt, and Kylie Fry, these girls are just so sweet. And sometimes I just want to be like, God, I want to put y'all in a bubble so bad that you don't have to deal with some of the things. I wish I could just be like, no. And then like put like a block up and be like, no, you can't do this. Cause I don't want you to, you know what I mean? But,
yeah.
But then all you can do honestly is just like tell people the truth. Because there's so much that isn't told in this business, and it would be a really nice thing if there was like a handbook that went along with it, but unfortunately there's not.
No.
So you just kind of have to learn your own way and the hard way a lot of times, which is how I've chosen to live my life. but yeah, it's really flattering that anyone would ask me any advice, because I still truly feel like I know nothing.
You've seen it. You've seen pretty much all that there is to see, honestly. Like, you've gone through the journeys of being on the label deal, like being in Nashville, being in Texas, going out on the road, opening for people, headlining. Like, you've done the roller coaster.
Yeah.
You know, so there's so much wisdom that you can offer, but everybody's path is different too.
That's right. And that's what I've told anyone that's ever asked me anything. I've got a young friend of mine, he's in another band. He's like my little brother, and he will call me all the time. He kind of runs the band that he's in. He'll be like, will you tell me how to deal with this situation? I'm like, I told him just yesterday, I said, here's what I would do. And I texted it out, and he called me. He's like, so wait, you're telling me to do this? I'm like, I would. That's what I would do. I mean, if you're asking me, you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, but It feels really nice that anyone would ask me anything, because I really, truly, there's so many days where I'm just like, you know, bawling my eyes out going like, damn, this is hard. Like, why does this have to be so hard this far into it? You know, but then I'll pull myself up and be like, I didn't come this far to come this far.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I haven't busted my ass for 20 years to stop now, you know, so I have to just figure it out.
Yeah. Amen. And what I love about your story too, is that you've gotten to be on the connect with fans on the radio side, and you have such a love for country music to where like doing the radio thing at Sirius
so
and everything.
Weird.
It's cool though, because it's, you're getting to play songs that you love, and you're getting to interact with folks that are in, that are still have that appreciation for what's on Willie's, what's on Outlaw, like things like that. So what's that journey kind of been like to being in media while also being an artist? It's like you're a player coach in a way, like in the media
world.
That's
cool. It's crazy, and it's so out of left field, cause I never saw that coming. But Jeremy Tepper was the program director at Sirius, at Willie's and at Outlaw. and he's an old friend of mine. He used to play songs off my first record. So he's been a fan legitimately my entire career.
That's awesome.
He passed away last June, suddenly, and we were all just like, oh, wait, what? Like, what do you mean? No, what are we going to do? And so they've replaced his position with different people, but he was so integral in the part of all of SiriusXM, especially those two channels. And he gave me that opportunity. And I was just texting with his wife last night, and I just said, man, sometimes it's so weird. Like, I'm just sitting there thinking, what a gift that guy gave me. I think he knew he was giving me a gift. It is a gift, and I don't ever take it for granted. I truly do love talking about country music.
Yeah.
And so I think he knew that, and he knew that, you know, he's like, do you want to talk on the radio? I was like, I guess. Yeah, hell yeah. So it's been really interesting, because I intentionally didn't want to put the two together, the artist side and the radio side. I wanted them to like naturally happen.
Yeah.
And it's starting to naturally happen. We're like even I've got this record for pre-sale right now, and people are like, wait, what? You're an artist? Wait, what?
You're like, yeah, I've been doing this a while.
But that's what I wanted. Yeah. I wanted them to find out the complete grassroots way and be like, oh shit. She knows what she's talking about, and she's also making a country record. Like, wait, what? So it's doing what I wanted it to do from the beginning. I've been on Willie's for 4 years and on Outlaw for two. It's a gift. I don't have any other way to put it than like Jeremy Tepper gave me a gift of knowing that if I just trusted the process that it would start working.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's finally starting to work, with meaning starting to work, meaning getting people to come to shows from the radio.
Yeah.
Not pounding them over the head with all of my music.
Oh, that's check out my music.
No,
oh,
God.
Here's Merle Haggard. Oh, and then here's my new song.
No, God.
You can't do that.
No. And, you know, it's crazy. It's a really interesting dichotomy, honestly, because I'm also doing interviews for artists. Like, I interview artists.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I've never done that before. And Jeremy, when he was still alive, like, I would call him. He wanted me to interview someone. And I was like, dude, you haven't even like told me how to do it. He's like, I said, am I going to get like training or something? And all he wrote back was, ha. It's like training. No, ha. You're not getting training. You know how to talk to people. Just go bullshit. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's all it is. And that's what I love about country music too, is it seems like the guys and girls that make it and have been doing it for a while just have such a love for the genre. Like, you're not only just someone that's been doing the artist thing for a while and a songwriter creating it. You're someone who's getting to play it on the radio, but you're also someone who I'm sure listens to it and grew up listening to it. And it's like your first love.
Yeah. I mean, KYKX in my hometown was the station that we would listen to as a country station in Longview. And I think it might've been the only country station. And I remember sitting there with my friend Michelle in my bedroom with my jam box.
Ooh.
With a tape.
Wow.
And I would call the radio station. We didn't have speakerphones, so I'd call the radio station, turn the jam box up so that I could hear myself talking to the DJ. And then he started to know it was me. He'd be like, Sonny, turn your radio down or else, you know, you can't. It's like feeding back.
Yep.
So, but I mean, I was what, like third grade or something? So it's just crazy. It's so stupid, like thinking back about that. But that was what I loved. He'd probably be like, this is the only third grader calling to ask for Conway Twitty and like in the whole universe.
That's awesome. That's so cool though. And it's like for you to have grown up doing that and then getting to play shows and then getting to have people not even planning to make a record, but people being like, you got to make a record. And then those 1,000 copies selling quick. And then
it's weird.
Like thinking back to that little girl, like that's awesome.
I do that a lot. Actually, I think back and go, God, this is just so weird. But also, I mean, you know, something else that was brought to my attention, I don't remember who said this to me, but someone said, wow, you're really lucky that you get to do this. And I was like, not lucky. I fashioned my life to be able to do this. This was intentional. This isn't, I did this on purpose. Like, I did this career so that I could have the lifestyle that I have, you know? And, you know, yes, I'm lucky in the sense of this is what I get to do, but also it was very intentional.
Yeah.
I wanted to have a job where, cause it's a job, whether you look like it or not, like this is a job, you know? And a lot of people think it's a party. It's not, it's a job. It's a hard job. It's a really tiring job. But I mean, it was intentional. It was like, I wanted to work for myself. I wanted to wear what I want to wear. I didn't want anybody to tell me what to do. You know, I wanted to find a team that I knew would work with me, find like-minded people to work with. And that's what's happened. It's taken a really long time to get all those pieces in place, because there's always one asshole here, one asshole here.
Yeah.
But then, like, you know, after a while, it you replace the assholes. They're gone, you know, and then you put in a new person, you know, or fill in this spot with this person. And then eventually it just becomes this harmonious, lovely. I enjoy leaving my house. I love being at home, but I love leaving my house. There's been times where I've been like, God, I don't want to go on this run because so-and-so, or because this is going to make it tough, or there one person can be a cancer in an organization so quickly. That's what I've learned. And the goal in the music business is to not be the cancer.
Yeah, honestly.
It's so easy.
It's so much of it is the hang.
It's so easy to just not be a cancer.
Yeah.
Don't be an asshole.
Yeah, just be a good person.
Like, just be you're friendly. Playing music for a living. Not much of a living, but a living.
Yes, yes.
Okay, right?
Yeah, so, 100%. Talk about the title of the record and what kind of inspired that.
So I wanted something that was, okay, so, well, I went back and forth about this, honestly, but Rhinestone Requiem is the name of the record.
Yeah.
And I basically just think that it's like attributing, like, currently the, not attributing, but like, it's basically just, paying, homage to the past.
Yeah.
Right. Without saying, like, cause I thought about naming it like just my name or a self-titled album or something. I thought I went through everything. And then I thought, no, I wanted to have something, you know, country, because it is a country record. I have this guitar that I've had for, I don't know, 18 years or so. I bought it at, you know, Guitar Center. It's nothing special. It's just a J45 Gibson. It's not old. But for me, buying that guitar was a big deal because it was expensive, and like, I don't buy expensive things. And so I remember going in there and paying cash for this guitar. I think it was like $2,500, which 20 years ago or 18 years ago, that's a shit ton of money. That's, so I was like,
it's a lot of money to put on one thing. Yes.
Yeah. And so I was like, God. But the reason that I got it was because I had this vision to put these rhinestones around the edge. Didn't bother to tell anyone else that. So my dad, my stepdad, walks in. He's the one that taught me to play guitar. He walks in when I'm gluing these rhinestones by hand around the edge of this guitar. He walks in and goes, "What are you doing?" He's like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And I was like, "Dude, chill. Like, this isn't yours. This is mine. Like, I want to do this." And so he goes, no, you can't. I was like, "You don't understand. I'm opening for Loretta Lynn, and she's going to tell me that she loves this guitar. And that's going to be the end of it for me. Like, I'll stick a fork in me." So I had this gig coming up with Loretta to open for her. And I got her to sign it. And she said, "Wow, that is the most beautiful guitar I've ever seen," which stuck with me still to this day. So after that, I mean, there's so many signatures on there of people that are gone, but like Charlie Pride, Merle Haggard, Hank Jr., Jeannie Seeley, Jesse Coulter, Wanda Jackson, Alan Jackson, Marty Stewart, Tanya Tucker. I mean, it's got like a ton of people.
All the greats.
All of them. Connie Smith's on there.
Wow.
Rodney Crowell, Billy Gibbons, Bob Seger, Garth Brooks, Trisha Yearwood, like awesome. Vince Gill. It goes on and on. So anyway, so in 2023, I get this phone call from the Country Music Hall of Fame, and they wanted to put me in the American Currents exhibit. And they said, you know, would you like to have some artifacts? I was like, duh. Yeah. So what do y'all want? They were like, I don't know, that guitar that you have. I was like, okay, so that means I have to go without it for a year. But okay. So I donated that for a year to the American Currents exhibit at the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
It was so probably the highlight of my life, seeing that in a glass case at the Hall of Fame with all of those signatures on it. And it's the only thing in my life that's like materially that I'm obsessed with. Anything can be replaced. Yeah. Everything in my life except for that and my dog can be replaced.
And it's got those rhinestones that you put on it so many years ago.
And I put an S on the headstock over where it says Gibson. Like, and it is gorgeous. Like, I mean, it is gorgeous and trashy all in the same, like they're hand glued on there from, awesome. And they never came off. So it's like also an advertisement for Aileen's wood glue because it did not budge.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing. It is not.
They belonged on there. The universe said these rhinestones are supposed to be on there.
Exactly. My dad now, he'll laugh when he sees it. He's like, God, never forget when I walked in and saw you gluing those on there. I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's so cool. That's awesome. So that makes sense then for the name of the record.
Like, so, but that's the artwork on the back. So cool. So I just thought like that would be a nice, I wanted it somehow to say rhinestone, even though I'm not like a rhinestone-y girl. Like I don't wear a lot of sparkly
but
stuff.
But it's a huge part of country music history.
Exactly.
That rhinestone era.
Exactly. And that is what the guitar is for. And so I took a photo of my guitar sitting on my couch and then turned it into Bob, who does my artwork. And I said, make this the back cover. I don't care how you do it. And he's like, all right. So he did, and it looks really cool, and it's a, you know, perfect homage to all of the greats that have come before all of us, and I love it. It's literally the only thing materialistic that I have that I really care about. Everything else in my life can be replaced except for that.
That's awesome. That's so cool, and what a way to name this collection of songs. And what is it about this project that's different from the other ones? Because you've put out a lot of music in the last 20 years. Like,
I still can't believe that. Well, what's different about this one is we produced it. Harley and I produced it. This is the first time that I've done that. I've always had opinions, and I feel like maybe co-produced, but didn't give myself credit for helping co-produce whatever but this one we did, and that's what makes it different. And we're just so happy with how it turned out, and it's exactly what we wanted. And honestly, I know everyone says that I'm so excited about my new music, but like I really am so excited about this, and I'm excited for people to hear this
and be
able to see, you know, that it's me, you know. Still, it's me, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's our version of me.
And the day that it comes out, which this will be out after the record comes out and everything, but you get to play the Opry on release day.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Which, how important is as being such a country music person, growing up with such a love for this genre and this style of music, what's it been like to play the Opry and just being part of, you get to have your guitar in the Hall of Fame. Like, you've gotten to be around for so much, but what is it about the Opry that's still just so special?
The Opry to me is, it is the only thing really in my life that like is a goal. Like, I want to be a member of the Grand Ole Opry. Like, that is my goal. That was my goal day one.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And March 2nd, 2007, when I stepped onto that stage for the first time, I remember saying, I'm going to belong here. Like, I remember saying that to myself.
Yeah.
Little Jimmy Dickens is who introduced me when I walked on stage. And the second time, Porter Wagner introduced me, which I know.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It really is like the weirdest. It is the weirdest. I don't know how to explain. It's not weird, but it's like, It's surreal.
Yeah.
And anyway, I've watched every time I'm there. I probably annoy them. I call them so much. Can I please play the Opry? Hey, I'm going to be in town this day. Can I please play the Opry? Like, I love it. It is one of those things where, like, when I can bring someone that's never been backstage to the Opry, backstage, I feel like I'm doing something for humanity. Because I'm like, you know, like when my friends come in town or whatever, I'll be like, before the show starts, I'll be like, do you want to go stand in the circle? They're like, what do you mean? We can stand in the circle? I'm like, yeah. Do you want to go stand in the circle? It is the freaking circle at the Grand Ole Opry. Like, it is the pinnacle of what I feel like country music artists should want.
Yeah.
They should want to be standing in that circle. And so, I don't have words to even say how it makes me feel to be there, because I'm about to do it for my 77th time.
Wow.
Not that I'm counting, but I do have a Word document on my computer that tells me every day I've ever played.
I love it.
And honestly, I love it. I love being there. It's like an adult Disneyland. It's, you know, I've met some of my heroes there. I met Gene Shepherd. Jeannie Seeley's like my soul sister. I've been obsessed with her since I was a small child. And then getting to become friends with her over the years has been incredible. And she brought Gene Shepherd to see me one night. And when I walked off stage, Gene Shepherd came up and poked me in my shoulder. It was right before she died, maybe like a year before. And she poked me in my shoulder and she's like, you sing country music. I'm like,
it's the greatest compliment.
Literally, that carried me for like a year. I was like, I've got the biggest feather in my hat right now because Gene Shepherd told me that. And then like I met Charlie Pride there and Jan Howard and just all these people that have been significant to me in my life. And you can meet them and they're tangible. They're not on a stage far away. They're literally there with you. Jim Ed Brown from the Browns, he would walk past my dressing room and be like, hey girl, you know, like, I mean, it's weird. It's crazy. And like Vince Gill, that's where I met him for the first time. And he's become a friend over the years. It's nuts.
Yeah.
And it's really nuts.
And it's special to get to do it when this record comes out too.
I called him when we decided a record date, like a release date. I called him and was like, this is a really long time away, but can I please play the Opry August 1st? Please. Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't want to play anywhere else. I can't imagine playing anywhere else than there on the day that this record comes out.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's so wild to think back to like the beginning of you starting out being like, I don't know if I like put out a record. I just want to play songs for people on it's Sundays weird. at this Cinderblock bar at Poodles down in Austin. And now fast forward, you're playing the Opry for your 77th time. You've got a new project out. You've gotten to make a difference in people's lives. You've got a guitar that was in the freaking Hall of Fame. Like, it's unbelievable.
It really is pretty weird. Like when you put all of that together in one sentence, because like you also can't really, like, there's so many days that are the hard days.
Yeah.
And the good always outweighs the bad, or else we wouldn't continue doing it. But there are the hard days, which you have a pity party. It's not just me. It's everyone. I'm saying we as artists have pity parties. All of us do. And why isn't this and why isn't this and da da. But then also when you put everything together and you think of all the things that you have done, there was this thing called a joy jar that I saw, which this sounds like crunchy and earthy, but like if you every day, every single day, get a jar, put right on there something that happened great in your day. Cause there's never a day that 100% of things are bad. There's always one good thing, whether it's a bird chirping or, you know, your mom called you or anything, like something good is going to happen every day, even on the shittiest day.
Yeah.
Write that good thing down, put it in the jar. 365 days later, look in the jar and then you will have 365 things that happened to you good that you would have forgotten about otherwise. So I've been trying to do that. I keep forgetting, but I have done it some.
That's awesome.
And my jar is starting to fill up. So it is, it's, it's a hard business, but man, it's...
You got to keep your blinders on too and know that your path is your path and everybody's going to be different. And especially in the social media world, like...
Oh, don't even get me started
There's kids, but then they don't know how to play a show. And then they get up there and they have notes on their set list saying, I'm going to take my hat off here. I'm going to say this to the crowd here because they don't know how to do it. You know, like that's a real thing. So it's just, everything's just a little bit different. Like the days of building organically are just, it's a different time, but you got to keep your blinders on as an artist and just know this is my path. This is what I'm doing.
I know.
It's like a horse. It's like a horse race. That's why the horses wear
and
the blinders.
I know my strengths and I know my weaknesses.
Yeah.
And I think knowing them is also half the battle.
Oh yeah.
And playing at the Poodle Dog, playing at Jenny's Little Longhorn, playing to there was a halfway house across from my first gig, like, and there was like literally a halfway house at the Carousel Lounge is where I played first. And then there was a halfway house and this guy would sneak into the bar that was recovering, not supposed to be in there, from the halfway house. Please let me stay. Please let me stay. I know I'm not supposed to be in here, but please, I just want to hear country music, please. And like, he'd be the only person at my gig. I was grateful for him being there.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to kick him out. I didn't give a shit if he was in a halfway house. I don't care. Just mind your P's and Q's and sit there and like listen to the music. But you learn, or I learned, how to deal with people very early on, because there were so few of them. You had to make a show for the two people that were at your show, you know? But I was grateful to have two people there.
Yeah.
Better than no people.
Exactly.
You know?
And then when you, and then as the thing grows and you're playing in front of hundreds and then thousands and getting to do all that you've gotten to do, you think back to those days. But it's if you can play to no one, it makes it a lot easier to play to people.
That's right. And I mean, there were plenty of nights at the Poodle Dog where it was this one dude that was in the back by himself, and he would be there by himself, and it was us and it was him. And I learned how to have a show for Terry, you know.
Shout out Terry.
Terry, I think Terry's gone now, but Terry was almost gone back then, but I'm pretty sure Terry's no longer with us.
Oh man, but hey, it's been so awesome having you come on here and hang out, because you're somebody I grew up listening to.
That's so cool.
On the radio and listening to your music, and it's so awesome to get to have you here on the podcast. And
Thank
I'm so
you.
Excited for this next chapter that's coming. You got a bunch of tour dates going. You're Colorado, Idaho, back to my stomping grounds in New Jersey, Pennsylvania. You're going all over the damn place.
I know. We really are tying one on this time around. So
that's good though, and you get to see all those people, because you know folks in pretty much every market for how long you've been
doing it. I love it. And then we're gonna go back to Europe in the spring, and then
nice.
We usually go in the fall, but this coincided with the record release here, so yeah. I figured we'll just flip it a couple months and go in like March.
Yeah, and go tour a new record, which is like the best feeling when you have new music to play for people. And now in the age of streaming, they're going to know, they're going to be able to listen to it beforehand.
Right.
They're going to be singing back to you. It's going to be
so
cool. No, they will.
Thank you.
You have diehards, Sonny. That's
they're
what you've
so
built
sweet.
Over the
Thank
years. You have diehards and you have a following that is unmatched, and the passion that people have been watching you have evolve and grow for 20 years. Like
thank
there's
you.
Something special for that. Seriously.
Thank you.
And thank you for putting out music that you do and inspiring so many people.
Well, this
as
has
a country
been awesome.
Music fan,
you're great at what you're doing.
Thank
so.
You. That means a lot from somebody that I grew up listening to do this. So that is a very high compliment. I appreciate the hell out of
you're
that.
You're so welcome.
Thank you. Well, y'all be sure to check out our girl, Sonny Sweeney. New music out right now. Rhinestone Requiem, the new record. It is out. Get on her website. Check out the tour dates. Get out there and see her. Tell her that you watched or listened to this podcast too, and that you've been watching and listening for many years to her journey and her story. And folks in Europe, get ready in the spring going out there. Thank you to Sonny for coming on. For more on us, visit RaiseYourEye.com. Shout out to our friends from Surfside, Vodka Lemonade, Vodka Iced Tea, Vodka Green Tea. These are great. I know it's early, so you are not drinking it, but we're going to send you with an 8-pack so you can enjoy.
I can't wait.
They're solid. Those green teas have a lot of caffeine in them too. So we've got a few options over there for you to take. We got a bunch of ball caps over there too, if you want to take some
awesome.
Of those. So
yes.
For my girl Sonny, I'm Matt Burrell. This has been Outside the Wrap.
Never been the kind for staying one place for too long. ain't never been the best at saying I love you to a girl I love. Only got a couple tricks on my sleeve. They usually just